This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard with you for the next 3 hours live in downtown Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. Busy program lined up today. Plenty on what took place yesterday over in Italy, the Olympic Games gold medal match. That was awesome. Obviously, congrats to Team USA. They were phenomenal, and Hellebuck was the man. We'll talk college basketball tonight. Two big games on the docket, including what to do with Darren Peterson. Kansas at home is a small dog. NBA only three games, but we will dive in. Also, Nick Whaling on the program in 30 minutes. Thomas Gable from the Borgata in Atlantic City. I wonder what the handle was like yesterday for the game on the East Coast compared to out here on the West Coast with that crazy start time. And Zig Vergassi on the show as well. How do we approach the second half of the NHL? Paulie, they return. That anecdote yesterday during the game, the players now have to fly back to Miami because of the snow in the Northeast. And we have a full slate of games coming up on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Can't wait to dive into that.
Sure. I'm sure the Team USA guys are still drinking too and celebrating. So how do you feel?
Minus 150.
No kidding. So how do you feel? You know, it goes 46 years to the day. How the world has changed. Al Michaels had only done a couple hockey games. The game was on tape delay. The kids beat the mighty Russians. And now we exorcise the demons and finally beat Canada. And it's instant, and you're world famous right away. Hughes knows the moment. Hellebuck realizes the moment. But it becomes even sweeter after the fact when Canada starts to whine and complain. I mean, I would think that really it's like, okay, great for USA, great for the country. We get it done. We win gold. Hellebuck's the story, Hughes is the story, and then afterwards it's, well, we know who the better team was, and crying about the three-on-three format in overtime. It was incredible.
Yeah,
I didn't expect that out of Canada. I really didn't.
Immediately, like the first words that I saw like on a soundbite or a quote from anybody on any team was from McKinnon, who's like, clearly anybody who watched the game today knows who the better team was. That's one of the first things you got to say? I was stunned by that. Also, I mean, if we're honest, though, it does mean more to the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to, look, I talked to people from all over the country. And in fact, one of our buddies was in Cabo. Nice time to be in Mexico right now. He was vacationing in Cabo and he was watching at a bar with, he figured, about 100 people. And he told me, as one of the only Americans there, you could hear a pin drop. He sent me a video of it when it ended, when he was put the game winner. And I could hear a pin drop watching on video. And he thought, yeah, they're devastated. Like, you could see it in real time. I'm not going to rub it in. There's no point. Like, this will, and as people told me on X when I said, this is the beauty of this game is that here we are, the drama and the level of play was speaking for itself. But then you add in the fact that these are millionaires who play in the NHL, pouring their guts out for their countries. One team is going to be demoralized for days. The other team is going to be glowing for the rest of their lives. And as some people pointed out, they actually said, you know, Canadians are going to be demoralized for the rest of their lives. Like, that's probably a good way to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I mean, was it worth waking up out here in the West Coast and watching? That was 3 hours, that a phenomenal television for
it
us.
It had everything, yes.
Yeah.
And then how it ends, which I guess Linda Cohen is the only person who likes the 3-on-3.
I still don't like, you
overtime.
Can't have that.
I know, to decide a gold medal, and USA wins both of them. I know, incredible. But then for them to complain afterwards, that's like the equivalent in the heyday when the Lakers had Shaq. And if overtime was decided by free throw shooting, and then you lost and complained, if you lost to Shaq, it's like you have McKinnon, McDavid, and McCarr.
Mm-hmm.
You have a huge advantage, and you lost. You didn't lose because of some rinky-dink format. Here, look at this. This is great. McKinnon misses the wide-open net with 10 minutes left. Hellebuck has the save of the decade on Taves with the paddle of the stick. They kill off a 5-on-3.
Look at that save.
Come on. How good is that? And to think, I do whatever I can. I just got to get the paddle. And he doesn't hoist it. He decides to keep it on the ice. And he has enough of the stick to make the save. But then McCarr gambled and lost.
Mm-hmm.
If he wins that, it's going to be a 2-on-0. And they're likely going to win. But he gambled and lost. It became a break the other way. McKinnon didn't play the puck. They also didn't get back hard enough. And Hughes buried it and becomes a hero. That's why they got beat. I mean, there were several ways. It's not some rinky-dink format. I can't believe Cooper's comments afterwards. And Hellebuck, What's interesting now is how the Winnipeg fans look at him.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, hey, where's the Hellebuck now in big games that beat us, as in Canadians? We'd like to see that in road playoff games and like to get back to the Stanley Cup final or the conference final. But Hellebuck with 41 saves, a lot of people didn't think he had it in him. He's the reason they won.
I think if you talk to some players slash coaches and certainly fans, I think some of them, not all of them obviously, but some of them will say that playing like that in the Olympics actually means more than a Stanley Cup. Agree or disagree, but that's the level that we're talking about here when you have the chance to play for your country. And it is in this, for this year anyway, it happens to be USA versus Canada. And I thought Eddie O was, first of all, he was great on the broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
And he was terrific. He came on with us on Friday, pretty much like an hour after Team USA advanced to the finale, right? And he was talking about how, look, as a guy who played for Team USA back in the 80s.
Chicago kid.
Yeah, he said that really the Canadians to us were our biggest rivalry. But for Canadians, the U.S., we were never the Canadians' biggest rivalry. That was always Russia. So they kind of just like looked down their noses at us in terms of overall hockey, thinking that there's no way the U.S. could ever be on the same level as them. Well, here you are, 46 years after the Miracle on Ice, and they did it again, this time to Canada. So that probably stings even, you know, it makes it 10 times worse for those players who never want to lose to the United States of America.
The book was packed here. People were running around, screaming, going nuts, drinking. Epic celebration, USA chance. But it also, a little bit, I compare it to, and I know you were the first to say this as well, when the Triple Crown streak came to an end. About, okay, that's great, but now what? Like, it finally, after that long drought, we had a Triple Crown winner. But here to do it after 46 years, it felt great, but it felt even better then when Canada started to cry. And what happened afterwards, and the excuses. So, and there's a live reaction going back to Sunday morning. So, as you said, no man's land and the tough start time at 5 in the morning Pacific, but then they got what they wanted. It's a close game the whole way. You're on the edge of your seat, and then you get the overtime game and the incredible finish.
We cannot forget the goal from Matt Boldy. We talked about how
the penalty kill. 100% penalty kill, and they got the first goal, yes.
Yeah, and the level of athleticism, puck control, and actually getting that past Binnington. Again, we talked about the game winner for the women last Thursday, how that winning goal was a 10 out of 10. I mean, Paulie, to set, not really set the tone, but to get on the board first in the manner in which Matt Boldy did, that's pretty close to a 10 out of 10 goal there as well. Splits two guys, the puck handling again, gets the bounce perfectly, and then goes right by Binnington. Man, just as I've gotten older, the stuff that I appreciate on the field that I realize now, I could never, ever, ever in my wildest dreams ever do. One, some of the goals that you see in soccer are just, I can't even relate to that. I have no idea what that would be like. And the same thing here with goals occasionally. That was amazing to get on the board in that fashion. So then,
he's doing the post game interview was epic. His teeth are falling out. He's got a chipped tooth. You know, there's blood, and, you know, it was big. They didn't score on the four-minute power play, but he ends up winning it as well, and he knows he's a rock star. But I'm just shocked at what – you don't see this in hockey. You know, the tough guy – you think maybe that'd be NBA where the guys have excuses.
You're right. I know.
They lose.
I know. You're right.
I mean, that was incredible how they complained about everything, that the better team lost in the format and all this, and you scored one goal. And as Jeff Davis said, who works here at Circa, and we kept saying, when did they look the part? Never. They never played up to their power rating in this tournament.
True.
And what they were, I mean, they had to win an overtime in one of the games. They had the comeback win against Finland. They were down 2-0. And here they lose in overtime, and USA got the first goal. They never looked like this powerhouse freight train, but one of the best teams since maybe 87 Canada. It wasn't there.
Good job by you, by the way. You immediately, as soon as Team USA won last Friday, you said, oh, under 5.5 all day long. And that got there. Eddie O, he thought it was going to be offensive, you know, fireworks. We never got that at all. We got the shots, especially from Canada. But Hellebuck was amazing in that spot. And I made the mistake, by the way. It's early. I'm still trying to wake up. Yesterday morning, I put on YouTube TV instead of Peacock. And I'm texting back and forth about some stuff in the game with Chris Massaro, pro bettor, a friend of the network. And he eventually he goes, Mitch, I think you might be a little bit behind here on the delay. I'm like, am I? YouTube TV must have had a 6-7 minute delay than Peacock.
Cool.
The second period was 3 minutes in, and I'm like, wait, second period's here already? Are you kidding me? So that was odd, and I wanted to get involved live. Thank God I didn't, because I was way behind on the times. But then how it also closed with Johnny Gaudreau. And his parents in the stands, yeah. And the former teammates coming out there, and then they bring the kids. I mean, my God almighty. Someone here that now has a little boy that's going to be 2 in April, it hits differently as a father now. Mm-hmm. That was just, you can't top that. Phenomenal from start to finish to bring them out there to get the photo and for them to see how the players are going to celebrate. And you're right. I mean, why would they have stopped drinking already?
Oh, a lot of guys said they could read lips. I'm going to get bleeped up tonight. The guys said they showed several guys with USA.
And from the stories that we've heard about hockey players, it's probably like Andre the Giant. Uh-huh. They can probably drink 3 cases if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Wade Boggs time.
That's right. That's right. That was so good with Catherine Tepper. She asked some great questions, but this guy's teeth are falling out. He's going in his rant and how good he was afterwards, composed.
Just took the high stick right across the chops.
Yeah.
Then he scores the game winner.
Isn't it something, though, how everything's changed in the 46 years, though?
Yeah.
I mean, the game was against Russia was tape delayed, and Al Michaels like, I'll give it a try. I know what icing is and offsides. How about that? Mm-hmm. That's about it for me.
Well, for what it's worth, Kenny Albert, we talked to Eddie O, so he's great, but Kenny Albert was also fantastic on the call.
Yes.
So overall, man, what a game.
A+. And Tirico setting up Eddie between in the intermissions, too. Yep. Yes.
We'll hit it several times show the next 3 hours. Up next, college basketball. The angle struck again this weekend.
6-0.
Yeah. And are you riding the streak or a believer? This is the night that all streaks must come to an end. We'll discuss next. Follow the money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
We're going to look at tonight's NBA card right now as we head out to the Progressive Guest Line. Nick Whalen joins the program. He is with RotoWire, now hosting Monday through Friday here on VSiN as well, 1 o'clock Eastern on Prop Points with Jeff Erickson. Nick, good afternoon. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it as always. I want to begin with this. So the Hornets lost back-to-back games after the break. Good competition, though. They lost to Houston and then a back-to-back against the Cavaliers. They were game in both of those, but they lost both. In the second game against Cleveland, Colin Knipple had 33 points, hit a bunch of threes. And then I noticed that there was an alert sent out that Cooper Flagg was going to miss the game yesterday for the Mavericks yet again. I'm like, okay, that's enough for me. Like, maybe they don't shut Flagg down completely, but I looked, the best number I can find was Colin Knipple to win Rookie of the Year at plus 450. He goes out yesterday, has 28 points in a win. Mm-hmm. They're still alive for the playoffs. Who knows? Maybe they win that division. Is that a bad bet by me, or is it still maybe worth betting him around plus 350 today?
I think it could be worth it. Now, you know, Cooper Flagg has only missed, I believe, 7 games in total on the year, so we still have some work to do as far as, like, disqualifying him for the award, and I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think Dallas ideally would probably love to rest him as much as they can down the stretch, and they likely will, but they also know it's important for Cooper Flagg to win Rookie of the Year, so I don't think they will hold him out intentionally to the point where he would miss enough games to knock him out. But I think it's also clear that the Mavericks clearly lied about this foot injury. You know, they said he'd be back right away after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. That is not the case. I would not be surprised if this stretches 2, 3, 4 more games. And then all of a sudden we are in dicey territory where, you know, he could suffer a legitimate injury that actually does knock him out of contention. I also think it's worth noting that for as great as Flagg has been, like if both guys played, let's say 75 games, yes, Cooper Flagg wins this award, no question, but it's not like there's a huge gap in terms of the production. Like Cooper Flagg has been the better overall player. He's had the bigger, splashier overall games, but Colin Knipple has had some huge moments. He stayed healthy. He plays every single night. He's not just a 3-point shooter. It's not like he's Kyle Korver, right? He picks up his rebounds really well. He's a better defender than he's given credit for. And he's also a part of one of the best stories in the league. Like the Mavericks are just a nothing team the rest of the way, right? Any game that Cooper Flagg plays, you know, he'll be the focal point. He'll get his numbers, but it doesn't matter if they win or lose games, and they're going to lose more than they're going to win. Whereas, like, if Charlotte, you know, keeps up this run, like you said, they took two tough losses coming out of the break, but those are really competitive games that came down to the final possessions against really good teams. If Charlotte makes the playoffs, you know, they get out of the play-in and Con Knipple is the second best player on that team and a big reason for it, I could see that stealing some voters, you know, rather than Cooper Flagg kind of getting his numbers for a team that's not competing.
Well done. Good breakdown. How about Spurs plus 330 to get the one seed?
Look, I don't mind it, guys. I am holding a Spurs plus 450 to win the division ticket. Ooh, has been more so my focus. I thought that was a two-team race. I thought that was kind of a crazy number. You know, when you look at, I never thought Dallas or Memphis were really in that, but that's neither here nor there. Look, I think it's possible, right? I mean, OKC picked up a win in a spot that you didn't necessarily think they would yesterday. That was kind of one of those reminder games from OKC of the infrastructure that they built. Even when they don't have SGA and Jalen Williams, they still have so much talent in terms of depth on that team. But it's only a three-game spread right now between OKC and San Antonio. Spurs have obviously had the Thunder's number. Jalen Williams is probably going to miss a couple more weeks. We're not really sure on SGA. And look, if you're OKC, this dream of like setting the single season wins record, that died a while ago. Yes, you could still be the one seed. You still want the one seed, but you also just won the title. Your best player just won the MVP. We see this every year, guys, right? When you have a team that climbs the top of the mountain, that accomplishes everything, it's really, really hard to come back and have that same level of grit and determination, for lack of better terms, night in and night out in the regular season. So I don't really see a reason for OKC other than wanting to kind of get some continuity with all their guys back later in the season. I don't see them, you know, pushing harder than they need to necessarily to get the one seed. I think they're ultimately fine if they fall to the two. So I would argue that the one seed probably matters more to San Antonio. This is a team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2019.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Okay. So how about tonight's game? It is a terrific basketball game. They're the two seed right now in the West. They're on the road taking on the one seed, currently speaking, in the East, the Pistons. Detroit Lane, 1.5. The total here is 232.5. What do you make of those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the first, like, I need to watch this Spurs-Pistons game since, like, 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
But it's clearly the game of the night, especially given our other two options here. Yeah, I think the total is interesting here because, you know, you have two really good defensive teams. You also have two teams that are top five in offense over the last 10 games. Spurs have been playing fast. They've been piling up a ton of points. But I am on the under 232.5 here, guys. You know, this could end up looking silly. Totals have been crazy in the NBA this year. But both of these teams, when you comb through the box score, it's like when they run into other good defenses, that's when we're seeing these games that are played in the low 200s, maybe into the two teens. And I think these are two teams that care a lot about these kind of matchups, right? I mean, we saw the Pistons come out on the road against the Knicks right after the All-Star break and put a beat down on that team. The Spurs have stepped up in some huge national TV spots against other good teams this year. I think these are two teams that are hungry, two teams that still feel like they need to prove it in their respective conferences. And I think this could be one of those games that we come away from saying like, man, that felt like a playoff game. Like I think that the defensive effort is going to be a lot higher than your average regular season game tonight.
Do you agree with me? I said it before you came on. You got to take the Grizzlies here, and if you lose, so be it. Sacramento's lost 16 in a row, and then you see they were down two in the third quarter in San Antonio, yep. And the next thing you know, it's a 25-point game. They are horrendous. They aren't playing people, limited minutes, and they're horrendous in the fourth quarter as well.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the Kings team doctor, who is just, he's looking for anything. Any possible malady, like yes. You're shutting down for the season. I mean, DeMar DeRozan, if you're watching, just stay away. Stay away from the doctor. Stay away from the facility. They're coming for you next.
They are.
Yeah, I mean, the Kings have lost 16 in a row, but they've already kind of accomplished what they need to. They are far and away the worst team in the NBA. And what I mean by that is like they could afford to win a game, whereas Memphis has 21 wins, and they almost need a loss more. I wonder if we see some shenanigans with Ty Jerome, who was added to the injury report this morning with an illness. That sounds to me like a Lauri Markkanen type of situation.
Yeah.
You know, Memphis is at least playing their guys. You know, I think they're trying to avoid like the Utah embarrassment, but what they're doing is playing like 10 or 11 guys the same minutes. You know, everybody's playing somewhere between like 18 and 26 minutes every single night. So Ty Jerome, when he goes out there, he has to do his work in like 21 minutes. It's really confusing from a prop betting standpoint. I'm staying away from the side here, guys. You know, the Kings are going to win another game at some point. Maybe it's tonight. But I did play Maxime Reyneau over 10.5 rebounds in this game. Memphis is a bottom five rebounding team, if not bottom three, if you look at a more recent sample. He's kind of avoided the tank. They have some guys whose minutes have been reduced, but DeMar DeRozan, Reynaud, and Keegan Murray are the guys that are actually playing real minutes when they're healthy. So Reynaud over 10.5 boards. Precious Achiuwa is another guy I kind of like at 5.5 rebounds. And then for better or for worse, guys, I'm going to take Keegan Murray over 16.5 points. He's played two games since a long injury absence. He's played 32 and I think 38 minutes in those two games. So if he plays mid-30s against this Memphis team, he's going over.
Very good. You can follow Nick on X. He is at Whalen, but use the number one instead of the letter L, WHA1EN, host of Prop Points Monday through Friday right here on VSiN. That's at 1 o'clock Eastern with Jeff Erickson and also with RotoWire. Nick, awesome as always. Thank you for the time. Best of luck tonight.
Thank you, guys. Same to you.
Yep.
Take care. Good to talk to you.
He was on the Progressive guest line.
Well, you pointed this out a couple weeks ago, and boy, this has moved. Down to $1.20 now.
Crazy.
And DeBansa, this was interesting. This was yesterday on his podcast, Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe on Darren Peterson's draft stock.
I'm not sure Darren Peterson is going to go first anymore, which I would have bet anything on 2 months ago, but there's just too much weirdness with this Kansas thing, with him coming out of games and the cramping and the competitiveness. And unless he's actually hurt, which is now a new theory, I think teams value competitiveness too much. It's the number one thing we've learned about the NBA in the last 15 years is, you know what it's a good idea to have? Competitive guys. And I think this has just gotten too weird with the Kansas thing. And I think there might be better picks.
I will tell you this, and I had so many Darren Peterson conversations, and I remember talking to various people being like, what? He just took himself out of the game? And because I hadn't seen it. And they're like, yeah, he literally pointed to Bill Self. I was like, I'm out. That's it. And no one knows what to make of it.
I don't like it. I don't understand it. And it gives me Ben Simmons flashbacks to the OSU thing when he was just like, I'm out, and didn't care if they even made the NIT or whatever he did. Now, I hope that he actually has some physical stuff going on that he's afraid to make worse would be my hope. It's where DeBansa just becomes an easier pick, because ultimately you just made the key point. You're talking about guys who are going to get fired if they get this pick wrong. And that's when you just gravitate toward, you know, this guy, he's 6'8", perfect body. Worst case scenario is going to be a better Andrew Wiggins. This is a safer bet. I'm just going to take this guy.
Yeah, good point at the end.
Yep, sure.
Your job's on the line. I know.
In this class?
That's a good point, though, competitiveness. It ties into you love the game and the competitiveness, too.
It's interesting, because what if there is a prop up, and there will be, eventually, of Darren Peterson's draft position, 1.5. And they could actually make it 2.5. You could put up some alt numbers on this. Like, could he potentially slide past number 2? It's a loaded draft class.
Yeah.
So if the team picking first overall says, nah, we don't want him, we're taking DeBansa, and yet the list of great players is not just Peterson and DeBansa, the team picking second or even the team picking third could say, we're in the same boat. I don't want it. He just said the biggest thing for teams in the league in the last 15 years is competitiveness. Well, there potentially might not just be one team who thinks that then.
Uh-huh.
And he could all of a sudden slide to like 4 or 5. Maybe there's a path for that to happen.
That's right. Like Zach said, everyone's having the Peterson conversation. Another card went for $5 million over the weekend.
I can't wait to hear the details on that. And it happened again on the PGA Tour. Long shots that came in this weekend. Paulie, details next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Welcome back. We're live in downtown Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We go back to the East Coast now as Thomas Gable joins the program on the Progressive guest line. He's in charge of the race and sports book at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Thomas, thanks for the time as always. How are you today?
Doing well. Snowed in here at the Borgata, but we're hanging in there.
How much snow are we talking?
I haven't looked outside yet. I haven't left since yesterday morning, but I think we're probably over 18 inches here at that point. So
that sounds terrific.
Hang in, buddy.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so I talked to a couple of different bookmakers out here, and I asked them the same question about the handle on the hockey game yesterday, because it's 5 a.m. out here, obviously, on the West Coast. One said it was pretty strong, obviously could have been better if it was later in the day. The other responded by saying it was the marquee event of the day, probably the weekend. It flopped maybe a little bit, because it was later in the day, would have been much better. You're 3 hours later in the morning than us. How was the handle there at the Borgata?
I thought it was great. I think certainly if it was later in the day, that would have helped everybody. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of just the interest level, certainly the marquee event of not only the day, I think the weekend for sure. And, you know, we had obviously this snowstorm was supposed to hit the East Coast starting yesterday afternoon. But I didn't know if people were going to stick around or not or try to get out of town. But that was not the case. People were here. It was a very patriotic crowd. Certainly kind of one-sided action. Everybody was backing America. Whether you could get them at, you know, even money or even a little bit better than even money in some places. So it was a great game to watch. Crowd was very lively and into it. And, you know, afterwards, I thought it was a very emotional ending too, not just because the United States wins gold for the first time in 46 years, but locally here with what they did with Johnny Gaudreau and, you know, holding up his jersey at the end and bringing out the kids on the ice. That family is obviously from South Jersey here. I mean, hell, we have employees here who know the family. So it was a pretty emotional thing here. And, you know, obviously every day we get games that, you know, you're either happy or you're sad or mad or whatever because you win or lose, or you lose money or win money on it. But this was a different type of emotion that people were feeling, I think, yesterday watching that game. And it was just a cool scene overall and nice to be a part of.
Do you remember where you were in 1980?
Probably in a playpen somewhere in my house.
Okay. Right. Isn't that incredible how it's last time we won gold? I mean, I don't remember anything about the game. I was like you, a young lad. But going back, the game was on tape delay, and they're like, oh, what the hell? Put Al Michaels on the game. He called like two hockey games in his life up to that point.
Pretty incredible when you go back and watch that game. And certainly I have seen it a couple times in my lifetime, but obviously no memory of it in real time. But, yeah, I mean, to be this 46 years to the day that happened is pretty cool. And obviously made a lot of Americans proud to be a part of that, and certainly stung for our Canadian friends up there. And, but I'm sure, you know, there's obviously a lot of good natured ribbing going back and forth between friends. But yeah, I mean, it was certainly an emotional end for that.
Yep. So you're great at college basketball. There's been some movement here on the Louisville game. What do you think of Carolina catching 3.5 at home?
Yeah, both teams coming in here 9-5 in the ACC. And I was a little surprised that Syracuse was taking money on Saturday against UNC. At one point, they moved to the favorite in some spots. I had that game, UNC, 2.5. So it was a no-brainer for me to bet the Tar Heels, and they ended up winning that game pretty easy fashion. But certainly a much better opponent coming in here in Louisville. They're coming off a nice win against Georgia Tech on Saturday. But UNC is undefeated at home this season. And, you know, I think the big thing on Saturday was Henry Vasseur was back for the Tar Heels, and his interior presence makes a big difference. They weren't taking as many threes as you saw in that game when they played NC State, when both Vasseur and Caleb Wilson were both out in that one. I thought their shot selection was a lot better on Saturday, and they weren't playing iso ball on offense. And, you know, if they run things through their big man and he gets touches, the offense just flows a lot better. Obviously, they'll have to stop Mikael Brown Jr., who has been really playing well lately for the Cardinals. He scored 25-plus in three of his last four games. Only a freshman, but he means a ton to this Louisville team. And, you know, if you look at the ACC in general, in terms of no one's beating Duke. I think everyone knows that, unless there's a big upset that happens in the conference tournament. But Louisville can play with a lot of teams in the country. Maybe not the elite of the elite, but offensively, they can score with the best. They just have to cut down on the turnovers that's been plaguing them recently. And I still question the defense overall, especially against the better opponents. If you separate out some of their defensive numbers, while the overall defensive efficiency number looks good on paper, when you drill down, you'll find that a lot has been built on the back of weaker opponents, and it gets much worse when they're playing quad one competition.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not sure Louisville has what it takes to make a deep run come March, but with no Caleb Wilson here again for UNC, I'm going to stay away rather than take the points with the Tar Heels. To me, there's only two to say. It's either you're going to take the points with the Tar Heels now at 3.5, or stay away, and I'm leaning towards staying away here tonight.
Where are you at currently with the Kansas number as they're hosting a very good Houston team, although they're on a two-game losing streak going into this game tonight, and how difficult is it to kind of like try to book these numbers against such good competition, not knowing what Darren Peterson's going to do on a game-to-game basis?
Yeah, that's the thing. So we're at 2 right now for this game. Still a lot of 1.5s out there that are juiced. And you're even seeing some 2.5s now pop, but in this one, I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's with Peterson. You know, when you're looking at Houston, they've kind of now reached the end of this really tough 3-game stretch on the schedule that started last Monday night, going to Iowa State. That ended in a 3-point loss. Obviously just lost on Saturday when they were taking money against Arizona at home, but came out flat and just never able to fully take control of that game. And Houston fell into that common phase that we have seen in previous years from them, where they can go long stretches without a field goal or even scoring at all. And uncharacteristically, they were also turning the ball over in that game. So, it ended with a good result for us, though, to have Arizona win that game outright. But if you look at both teams, I think the more perplexing result on Saturday was Kansas losing at home to Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think many saw that coming. It certainly was setting up as a possible look-ahead spot for Kansas. So I personally stayed away from the game because I wasn't confident taking the points with Cincy. But, again, ended up being another good result for the house with that huge upset. Kansas, they're just such an enigma this year, really, due to the lack of availability of Darren Peterson. They've shown a number of times they can win without him, but no question, if you're back in this program, you want him on the floor. I just don't know how you can trust if he will be available or even how many minutes he will give you if he does play. I personally, again, I can't see investing in them come tournament time. We know how good they are at home. I make this game Houston 1.5 with Peterson playing. It's a no play for me on the side here. I'd have to look at the under if I was going to do anything with this game. Look at the under on the total. But, I mean, obviously, Kansas has a great record at home. They're very tough at home. But to me, the number's a no play.
Thomas, about a minute left here. It's a small card, but some other good, like, lower league teams are in action tonight. Do you like anything overall?
Yeah, obviously the Southland has a couple of teams going, and one game that I have an eye on that I'm probably going to be getting involved in is McNeese laying the points there against UT Rio Grande Valley. I'm going to lay it there with McNeese.
Okay. Sounds good.
Be safe.
Hey, have fun shoveling, okay?
Yeah, can't wait to get home and have to shovel out my driveway just to be able to pull in.
So, sounds amazing. Thanks, Thomas. Okay. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
I got a great text from someone who's in New York right now, and the snow is so high, they go out and they can put their beer right into the snow and chill it. I got a picture I'll show later about how much damn snow they got.
Crazy. By the way, in about 20 minutes, friend of the show and network, and really friend of the betting community,
yeah,
Frank B., who lives in Puerto Vallarta. I've been chatting with him since yesterday morning to see how everything is going right after all hell broke loose. I'll give you an update on what he has told me. And, man, it's some of the videos that he has shared.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Up next.
Right out of a movie.
It really does look. It looks like a war zone out of a movie.
Sicario and whatever. Yeah.
We have to do something about MVPs and big games, the good, the bad, and the ugly, coming up here on VSiN.
This
This is Follow the Money on VSEN.
Yesterday, absolutely worth waking up wherever you are. Hell, if you were in Hawaii and you woke up to watch that game, you got your money's worth as Team USA defeated Team Canada for gold medal over in the Winter Olympics. And to talk about it right now, Zig Fercassi joins the program, anchor on SiriusXM Sports, longtime radio guy, NHL lover as well. He's on the Progressive guest line. Hey, Zig, thanks for the time today. How are you?
Mitch, Paulie, how you guys doing?
Doing really well.
Good, bud.
So overall, what did you make of the sour grapes after the game, almost immediately from guys like Nathan MacKinnon? And do you think he was right, though?
Oh, he was absolutely right. I mean, I've been watching this stuff for about 50 years now, and you can tell when a team has been thoroughly outplayed. The territorial edge was huge in favor of Canada. And so MacKinnon was absolutely right when he said, you know, you decide who the better team was, because Canada was. So you know this as well as anybody. Sometimes you need your goalie to stand on his head. And that's what Connor Hellebuyck did, quite simple. I mean, we were talking a little off the break there. That save in front of the net on Taves, that should be on a postage stamp. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they got a little bit lucky there when MacKinnon had a layup to the right side. If you're watching on TV, it's the left side.
Right.
And he hit the side of the net. So you also need some breaks. But I thought overall Canada was the better team. But in the end, U.S. made the play that they needed to. And quite frankly, I thought throughout the tournament we're a good team. They deserved to be the gold medal winners in 2026.
Based on what happened in his playoff career, did you think Hellebuyck had a game like that in him?
Yeah, right, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a guy who has won Vezina trophies. I mean, hell, he was MVP and all this. Yet, you know, for whatever reason, Winnipeg just usually comes up small in the playoffs. And now, granted, he doesn't have Charlie McAvoy and, you know, Faber and Sanderson and guys like that on his defense. So he's probably saying, hey, I finally got a defense in front of me. But all kidding aside, this is something that, you know, Winnipeg's probably maybe on the outside looking in this year. But I got to think from a confidence standpoint that this does wonders for Hellebuyck going forward.
You love hockey. You've been following this for years. What did you think of the 3-on-3 overtime and then what Cooper said afterwards?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that. But again, he's absolutely right. If you look at it from where this is as opposed to, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs where we'll get a 3-overtime or 4-overtime game, I don't think that, to be quite honest, on the Olympic stage, that maybe the casual person, even watching hockey, would probably want to sit through that. So, again, you know, that you take the comment for what it is, because the NHL and the Olympics are separate. So I have no problem with it. All the guys knew the rules going in anyway, so it wasn't like this red light surprise. But, you know, ideally, you put it this way, you wouldn't see this in the NHL. I think there's enough groundswell on that saying, all right, it's good for the regular season. And I hate the shootout, by the way, but yeah, you know, you can decide games that way. But when it comes to playoffs, it's like brass tacks. Think of it like in baseball. You got the ghost runner, I guess, starting the 10th inning, but you don't essentially do that, you know, during the playoffs and everything. Mm-hmm. So well, that's how that looks.
Well, we agree it was a ridiculous way to decide the gold medal. But you have an advantage going in when you're putting out McDavid, MacKinnon, and Makar to start the 3-on-3. I mean, that's
exactly,
to me, that's on you. You got to win that. But so Eddie Olczyk said this on the broadcast about when we won in 1980, you had so many young people that then wanted to become hockey players. Could the same thing happen here where I want to be Hellebuyck, I want to be Hughes? Do you see that wave of young people saying, I want to be like these guys and play hockey?
Great question. I would say yes, but maybe not to the point of what we saw in 1980, because you got to remember that was still essentially an era where you had just the three networks. Maybe ESPN was just getting started in its infancy. You didn't have cell phones. You didn't have 24/7 sports coverage. Mm-hmm. You didn't have the internet and everything like that. So I think that took on a legend of itself, where I think now it's just so mainstream, and we see these kids already. What is it? I think it was Al Michaels I heard today saying about at least 30% now of the NHL players are United States. So I think it'll continue to grow. There's no question about it. Would I see it as a seismic spurt from like 1980? Probably not, but still, there's going to be enough people out here. You got to remember, too, these are professionals. Whereas back then,
right.
You know, the U.S. was playing with collegians. I think the only team basically was Russia. They were playing with freaking pros, for goodness sakes, who, you know, Fetisov and all those guys. So I think, so the long answer to your question, I think there'll still be growth, but maybe not in terms of that gigantic leap of faith we saw from 1980 till yesterday.
Okay, fair enough. Sig Fracassi is our guest here on the Progressive Guest Line, longtime hockey guy, longtime radio guy, anchor SiriusXM Sports as well. Follow him on X at Zig Sports Voice. So they don't have a lot of time, by the way, to get ready for the second half of the season, Zig. I mean, it's a full slate basically on Wednesday night, and a lot of teams that had a full complement of players over in the Olympics are in action. For example, the Avs, the Wild, the Lightning, the Golden Knights, they all had eight players each. Jack Hughes, Devils, we're 2 days out yet. So we have plenty of time to actually think about how we're going to handicap these games and bet on them. But what is your early takeaway to, you know, things to look for that night?
You know, that's something too. And remember, the Olympians had to fly into Miami as opposed to JFK because obviously of the big storm that hit the Northeast. Trust me, I'm aching from shoveling a foot and a half here in Northeast New Jersey. So I know all about it, but I would be stunned if, like, what is it? I think Vegas plays LA on Wednesday, if I remember right. I would be stunned, like, if Eichel, Theodore and Stone and all those guys would play, because, you know, obviously then now you got to get from Miami back out west, you know, and there's another 5.5-6 hours there. So I got to think teams in that particular scenario probably would give those guys the night off. That's just my guess, because quite frankly, you know, they got to be, you know, fatigued, and I'm sure they've enjoyed a little bit of the nightlife, put it that way. So, you know, probably got to give them their chances there to kind of get back into hockey mode. That's going to be interesting too.
Yes.
You know, how long are you going to be able to have the high and the euphoria from winning? And now, poop, I got to go now try to clinch a playoff spot too. So I got to get back to reality. I think all that's to be determined. I would be stunned myself if guys like Eichel and them for Vegas would play on Wednesday. That's just me.
Does the time off mean sluggish starts, low scoring games, or does it lend to mistakes and maybe goals early? What does that look like when you come back off a 2 week break?
Yeah. I think there's a possibility of it probably being a little bit lethargic. It's almost in some ways like, you know, you're restarting something. I remember, what was it, when they had the lockout or the strike in 13, and then they finally got things going again. Play I seem to remember was a little bit ragged. So, you know, you can scrimmage all you want. You can do all those different things, try to simulate game conditions and all that. But I got to think, you know, it's going to take a little while. You may initially have the jump because you've been rested, but in terms of, you know, clearing your own end, making that pass, you know, until you start doing it again, it may take a couple of games for the, you know, the everything to be synchronized once again. So I could see some ragged starts throughout these games.
You recommend a flyer or maybe a, to win a conference or a Stanley Cup bet?
I'll tell you, I've never seen it, at least in the East, I've never seen it so tight the way that it is. So I'll tell you, it would be proceed with caution out there. And again, you know, in the West, I mean, Colorado is just, they're just so good. I just saw what now? Rantanen's now gone on IR for Dallas, so it looks like he's going to be out at least a week. That could be something worth watching, but I don't know. Colorado, until I'm convinced I could see some goaltending, they would be my favorite. Mm-hmm. But again, goaltending is a question mark for me with the Colorado Avalanche.
Follow him on X at Zig Sports Voice. Zig, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate that.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Be good.
Thanks, buddy.
There you go. Zig Fracassi, anchor of SiriusXM Sports, longtime lover of the NHL and hockey in general. We'll recap our weekend with our bets and tell you what we've added to the old portfolio coming up tonight and this week here in Pocket Plays next.